promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program for its editorial content. Statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
The Consumer Law Hour is brought to you by Farrah & Farrah.
And a very happy afternoon to you. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. It is a free hour of legal advice brought to you each and every single Saturday at noon by Farrah and Farrah. Eddie and Chuck. Chuck's gone today.
He'll be back.
He'll be back. Eddie is here.
He's
in the
on,
studio.
But I'm here.
Phone lines are open. 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Scott Kushner producing the show, keeping us honest. My name's Tim Tompkins. Eddie, what's going on today, man?
Oh, there's a lot going on, Tim. And I want to get back to a question we had last week from one of our callers about a branch that was protruding into her yard. The tree was on somebody else's next-door neighbor's property, and the insurance company, which they can do, they wanted her to remove the limbs that probably hung over the house, and that's, you know, her question was, can I require the neighbor who owns the tree where the tree is located to pay for the removal of the branches? And I reached out to a real estate lawyer here in town who's been doing it for a long, long time. And his answer was that she has a right to remove the branches, of course, because they are on her property. But because the branches have not caused any damage to her home yet, then she could not hold the neighbor responsible for the payment of the removal of those branches. So if the branches had fallen, let me give you that scenario, and had impacted her house and damaged her home, then she could hold the neighbor responsible, apparently. But now, since the branches have not done any damage at this point, she would have to pay for the removal.
Yeah,
that's the answer to that question.
I think I had heard that before on a different show when a JEA arborist came on. That seems to be a common question by a lot of people.
Yep, because it happens a lot around storms and everything else. But okay, all right. Now, last week, I mean, this is a recent situation that happened down in Tampa. Everybody's talked about stand your ground. We know what it's all about. Basically, stand your ground is, you know, if you act in self-defense, you can, if you're involved in altercation or you act in self-defense and the judge believes you acted in self-defense, then you're immune from criminal liability. I mean, you're not, you know, you're acquitted or the case is dismissed. Well, this is a case that happened down in Tampa. It just came out last week. And these two guys were in a bar. This guy just attacks this other person, unprovoked, just attacks him. So the guy who's attacked had a glass in his hand, and he smashes the glass against the other person's head and severely injures him. He is charged with assault with a deadly weapon. I guess the glass is a deadly weapon. It can be. The court, he alleged, stand your ground. He goes, he came at me. I defended myself with the glass. The gentleman who was hit with the glass was, I think he ended up getting blinded in one eye. So he comes back, and the court ruled it. He was charged with aggravated battery, assault with a deadly weapon. The court dismisses the case and says, no, he alleged stand your ground. He was defending himself. He's not liable for this criminal conduct. So the person who was injured, the blinded person who instigated the fight, sues this guy in civil court. He wants damages for his damaged eye. And the court ruled in this case, which is interesting because not all the circuits in the state of Florida follow this law, but the court ruled that since the judge found that he was he satisfied the stand your ground requirements and the case was dismissed, that the civil case where he sought money damages, where he was suing him for money for his injured eye, that case could not proceed forward. So he was able to use the ruling by the prior judge in the criminal case to get his case dismissed in civil court. So that, I think that case is not necessarily the law in the state of Florida, but that's what it is in Tampa right now. And because what usually happens in these cases, if a lot of times people who are involved in criminal conduct, maybe the perpetrator goes to jail, but also there's a lawsuit coming out of it also. And you see that all the time. You saw it in O.J. Simpson. Mm-hmm. You see it in all these cases. People who are involved in criminal activity, if they've got assets or they've got some money or something to go after, you see a civil case coming right after the criminal matter. But here, the judge found that there was no case because the stand your ground was properly applied, and so that case is over.
You heard that Zimmerman was punched in the face over the weekend?
Yeah.
I wonder if the guy that punched him is going to claim standing ground.
He could claim it, but I mean, it was provoked. Apparently, he was arrested. The other guy was arrested, right?
Really?
That's what I understand, is that the person who attacked Zimmerman was... I just kind of...
The irony in that, if he would have claimed it.
Right, but he could... Yeah. Everybody's claiming it. Why not? What do you got to lose?
Just stand in my ground.
I'm standing in my ground. Oh, yeah, there's a... That case, and that, you know, that stand your ground statute is relatively, it's only been a few years, and it's going to constantly evolve, and the interpretation of the statute will change. But every day we hear something different. This one out of Tampa is interesting. We'll see how that holds up. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you know, there's a Florida statute. It's the horse bite statute. And Yes. If you get bit by a horse in Florida, and it's an interesting statute because this person was down in Ocala. As you know, if you've been down there are all these horse farms. He pays some money. He's a former jockey, and he paid some money to go into the stable to check out some horses or to visit someone who had some horses there. He gets bit by a horse. So he wants to sue the owner of the horse for his bite, like a dog bite type situation. Interesting, Florida has an immunity statute that a stable owner and the horse owners under the statute are immune from liability under Florida's Equine Activities Liability Act. Because if you're there, and basically what the law says, if you're participating in any kind of equine activity, then you do not have the right to sue the owner of the horse or the stable owner for your injuries.
So it would be like if you got in a dog's cage, you couldn't sue the owner for the dog biting you if you were in the cage, essentially, right?
Or let's say you're riding a horse and the horse throws you off the horse. And you're injured, but you're participating in that activity. The owner of the horse and the stable owner avail themselves of this Florida statute, which gives them immunity.
Well, otherwise nobody would be able to ride horses, right?
Well, maybe the horse owners would not allow anyone to ride horses if there were. But this statute gives them immunity from that type of conduct. So it's interesting. I just thought that. I mean, not everybody's getting bit by horses these days, but I just find some of these laws where do they come up with this? I guess maybe the Association of Horse Owners got together and went to Tallahassee and say, hey, if you want kids to ride horses, and you got to give us some immunity because if we can't afford to be sued because we can't get insurance.
We have a couple of callers, okay, Eddie. I think I'm going to figure out how many people are getting bit by horses.
Let's do,
I really want to find out, though.
But you know what the thing is? I mean, it's interesting now because you take your kids to these places, you need to know that, hey, I mean, they can have a horse there that's really not friendly or not safe to ride, and basically the horse owner gets a free ride. Avail themselves of the statute, and unfortunately, if your child is hurt, you've got no recourse. Or if you're hurt, so you got to really do your own due diligence before you put them on a horse.
I'd be a lot more scared of getting kicked by the horse and being bitten by the horse. But
same thing. It applies to that.
Don't know a whole lot about horses. Hey, John, you are live on the Consumer Law Hour.
Thank you for taking my call, Eddie. Yeah, man. I appreciate what you do.
Sure, thanks for calling in.
My wife works for the county school board and has school board insurance for medical and is required every other year to go to their medical facility for blood work and a full physical, as well as myself. And she has to take off work during the week, during work hours, to go to this. And they do not pay her or pay me to go. And I didn't know if there was something we could do about that.
Mm. It's a job requirement?
Yes, to keep the insurance. And if you don't go, they charge you $30 per person.
Yeah.
Every week or every 2 weeks.
Yeah. So to keep your insurance at the same price point, you have to go to this doctor's appointment.
Yes.
And you pay for it, and you got to pay for it, and the time comes up. You can't, you have to use your vacation time or whatever it is.
Use vacation time or just doesn't get paid at all for it?
Well, it's a good question. It's a labor law question. I do have someone that I can talk to get you an answer, and I can report the answer back next week, but I'll call you next week on it. If you want to give Scott your phone number, I'll find out an answer and I'll call you back.
I sure appreciate it.
Yep. It's a really good question. And I think once we get the answer, we'll let everybody else know what the, what the result is.
Yeah, John, so you're on hold right now. Scott's going to go ahead and take your information. Again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Fair and Fair. Mike, over on the west side, what's on your mind, Mike?
Hey, yeah, how you doing, Eddie?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, so I have ADHD, and I'm middle-aged guy, never had it treated in my life. And my doctor suggested I go on Adderall, and I was on long-term, or what they call it, long-release Adderall for a while. I was on it for about a year and a half, and it started to affect me adversely. And at that time, I happened to be going through a divorce. And my question is, because the doctor I had to go see because of some of my behavior suggested that I may have a suit because I was not properly monitored about how that was affecting me and the levels in my blood.
Okay. Well, you know, I've heard this happening. It's not just Adderall. There's some other drugs that have caused compulsive. Are you talking about some sort of compulsive behavior resulting from the Adderall?
It wound up, you know, kind of hurt me a little bit in my divorce case because I kind of went over the top, behavior and stuff like that.
Yeah, but usually what I've read, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, once you're off the Adderall, then all those symptoms go away.
Correct.
Well, I mean, if the symptoms go away, that can be very difficult. And what you should have done, maybe your lawyer should have done, is present that evidence during the hearing. Say, you know, judge, here's what this Adderall, the extended use Adderall does. This is a side effect. And take that into consideration. That's why he acted the way he did.
But there's no recourse against the doctor who did monitor me.
I mean, you don't have any permanent injury. I mean, and typically, you've got to have some sort of permanent injury for either a malpractice. You got to have a permanent injury for a malpractice case or a case against a drug manufacturer. How long has it been?
About a year.
Because you got 2 years from the date you knew or should have known to file a malpractice case against the doctor. But that's really not a malpractice case. I don't see that as being a malpractice case. I mean, that's my opinion. You can talk to some other lawyers. You really didn't have any long-lasting effect from it. I don't know of any lawyer in town that would really work on that case because of, you know, the fact that once you're off the drug, you're okay again.
Yeah, so because of some of my behavior, you know, it's really impacted my outcome of the divorce and visitation with the kids. So it kind of seems to me like there's some long-term impact there.
Yeah, but then you can go back in front of the judge now, and you can always revisit visitation. Those issues will remain open in a divorce case. And you can file a motion to have you go back and explain to the judge, here's why I think you can bring in testimony. Your doctor can write a letter. You can bring your lawyer in, and he can argue that's why you acted that way because of the Adderall. And now you're off the Adderall, and, you know, you're not acting out like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I think you can do. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the best way to handle it. But
awesome. And thank you very much, Mike, for that phone call. So you're saying the injury has to be permanent.
Yeah, I mean, in a malpractice case, they're so difficult to handle. They're so expensive. Lawyers got to see a permanent injury before they're going to get involved in it.
I got you. All right. Well, that key music means we need to take a break. But I do have some really interesting statistics on horse bites when we come back. Stay with us. Thanks for sticking with us here on the Consumer Law Hour, News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by Fair and Fair, as promised. So I was checking up on this, Eddie, and people are getting bit by horses because they feed them apples.
Whoa.
So apparently the horses bite when you're feeding them apples. And also one interesting thing before we go to the phone lines is that horse deaths in America are 4 times as likely as being killed by a rattlesnake. There are 20 deaths a year caused by horses as opposed to 5.5 by rattlesnakes.
Wow. Yeah. Never heard about those. Right. Hear about the snakes, though.
Yeah. Apparently, horses just killing people all over. All right. Let's take it over to John. John, you're live on the Consumer Law Hour.
Mr. Farah, thank you for taking my call, sir.
Yes, sir.
Got a question. I'm a homeowner in Mandarin and lived there since the late 80s. Behind my house, I have a large pond that me and the neighbors are on the south bank of. It's about 100 yards wide. And on the other side, when we first moved in, was woods. Now, within the last 5 years, a development has come in and put a neighborhood on the other side of the pond. And the problem we're running into is when their new neighborhood was created, they put a 10-foot buffer on their bank of the pond with pine trees and other shrubs. And in their HOA covenants, it states that they can't remove any trees or erode the bank or anything like that. But homeowners now are moving into these homes and starting to cut the branches. And then from the branches, they started cutting down the trees to stumps. And it just kind of got worse and worse. And obviously, they're violating their HOA laws, but their HOA does not really want to enforce it because it raises their property value by, you know, saying that they're now on waterfront. So my question is, my neighbors have tried, we've reached out to St. John's River Water Management, who actually owns an easement where that even buffer is on their side of the bank, and they don't want to get involved and says it's their HOA's responsibility to enforce. But my question is, my neighbors and I are starting to think about litigation and possibly looking into any options legally to prevent them from cutting it down. I mean, it's a eyesore to us to have to see their neighborhood across the way, and it might not seem like a big issue, but, you know, if you've lived there for over, you know, 20 years and you're used to seeing trees and now you're seeing homes and pools and people and things like that, we'd really want that buffer to be intact to kind of separate us. So just wanted to get your opinion on it and see if there's any recourse we can
Is that a different HOA than yours?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it's a different HOA. Okay. You don't. Your HOA is not involved in that piece across the pond, right?
Not involved. I think they've sent some letters and tried to handle it cordially. But again, their HOA kind of says, you know, we've tried and there's nothing we can do. And again, I think it's in their best interest to lose that buffer to raise their property value.
But what jurisdiction do you have over a different homeowner? What jurisdiction does your HOA have over a different another HOA?
Again, we're a small HOA. We don't have issues or anything like that. But again, they've just tried to write letters. Okay. I think we've even had our attorneys do it. But there's really not much that I'm aware of that they can do. Just seeing if there's anything we can do as far as deterring our home values by them taking that buffer away and having, you know, other homes the way.
When you purchased your home, did they tell you that those trees across the pond would never be removed?
They told us that that was a St. John's River Water Management easement, so it wouldn't be developed on.
Right.
But you know,
your claim should be against your own homeowners association.
Okay.
For misrepresentation, if they told you that.
Okay.
Okay.
I understand. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
I appreciate that phone call, John. Linda, Thomas, and Carl, we see you waiting on the line there. Stay with us. We have a lot of time left here on the Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah each and every single Saturday at noon. FarrahandFarrah.com. Check them out. Thank you so very much for sticking with us here on the Consumer Law Hour, a free hour of legal advice each and every single Saturday at noon, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Got Scott Kushner behind the boards producing the show, keeping us honest. Eddie here in the studio with me. Chuck's gone today. He'll be back next week, though.
You better believe it.
My name's Tim Tompkins. The show's all about you answering your phone calls. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. Let's kick it over to Linda. Linda, thanks so much for staying on the line there. We appreciate you.
No problem. You don't know how much I appreciate you guys.
Thanks a lot, Linda.
Your program is great. But, okay, to get to my question, I had to take a carpet company to small claim court because when they cleaned the carpet on my rental, they left excessive amount of water in the carpet, which caused a very foul odor. I wasn't able to salvage the carpet at all. It didn't come back for 48 hours. Long story short, the owner once threatened to have me. He said I would have to pay for his attorney. Why would I have to pay for his attorney? I'm taking him to court.
I know. Let me tell you what he's getting at. Is there anything in the contract that talks about that?
We didn't sign a contract.
Okay, you just signed a contract. Okay, because under. How much money is involved?
$490.
Okay, because I'm going to talk generally here because for that small amount of money, I don't know if this statute applies or not, but there are Florida laws out there that basically have a loser pays. If you take someone to court and you don't win, there's a way that the other side can make you pay their attorney's fees and costs. I'm not saying it's going to happen every time, but it does happen. And the way it happens is if they make you an offer of judgment, if they offer you a certain amount of money and you don't accept it.
But he didn't.
He didn't offer you anything.
No, he okay. didn't want to go to mitigation. No, he refused to.
He hasn't offered you anything. But same thing. If he offers you nothing, well, he hasn't offered you. If he doesn't offer you anything, then you can't be held responsible for his attorney's fees. So I don't know okay. what he's talking about then. He's just, you know, he may be trying to scare you. If you didn't sign anything, you don't have anything in writing with him that
no.
says, okay. You just called him up and said, come clean my carpet. And
correct. It
okay.
was on my box. I gave him the code and boom. That
All right,
was it.
Right, right. Okay, yeah. Again, I'm talking generally because this is a small claim action, not what I'm typically used to dealing with.
I understand.
But I think that you're okay. You know, you can make him pay. If you go to small claims court, you can make him pay your costs and so forth. You know that, don't you? Because there's like a filing.
I didn't.
Yes, there's if you win and the court gives you a judgment for the $425 or whatever it
can talk. They're going to depreciate the carpet. I was already told that the carpet would be depreciated because it wasn't new.
Okay. So let's say it's worth $1,000, okay? I don't know. Mm-hmm. So the you're going to have to bring somebody in. You're going to have someone to testify as to the value of the carpet. So you got to bring somebody in so you can tell the judge, hey, the carpet was depreciated. Here was the value of the carpet when he came to clean it.
Okay.
But
if it's going to take some more. The price, I would have said, okay.
But see, it's very difficult. I mean, for $425, you're going to have to go spend $490 or $500. You have to spend probably a couple hundred dollars to go file the lawsuit. You got to have the sheriff serve him the papers. Then you got to go to a hearing in front of the judge. You're going to probably spend 4 or 5 hours waiting down there to get heard. So, you know, it's a day out of your life. And you've got to say, okay, is it worth it for me to, I mean, I can win. I'm going to win because I'm right. And then once you get the judgment against him, you've got to be able to execute that judgment. Just because you have a paper from the judge saying he owes you $1,000 doesn't mean he's going to pay you $1,000.
I know that. Okay.
I mean, you have to be able to go get it. Then you got to hire a lawyer to be able to go seize his property to get the $1,000.
Well, so, don't think because he has the franchise, you know.
Yeah, what you could do is write. I think the better way to handle it would be to contact the franchisor.
I tried that.
And say, here's what this person did.
Independently owned.
They would not get involved?
No.
And then, I mean, you may want to do a review, a Facebook review. Or something like that. That gets more attention a lot of times.
It does. Okay.
So, I mean, that because you're going to spend money and time.
Well, I had to pay the server $40
right.
and the file of food, I think, about $90,
right.
$80, so $130,
right. Yeah, and then did you pay the sheriff to serve the papers?
No, you use a private processor.
Okay, well, he's going to charge you to do that.
Yeah, $40 I paid.
Okay, and then you got to go to court and sit around all day long. I mean, I don't know. Some people don't feel it's worth their time.
Well, to me, mm-hmm. now it's about principle.
Well, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, then you...
I understand the time, the effort, but it's mm-hmm. more about principle, you know.
Well, then I think it's a case you're going to win. I think any judge who looks at it, and, you know, it's not just the depreciation. It's the fact that, you know, plus your money, you're out of pocket for the cleaning of the carpet. Not just the depreciation.
Well, I never paid him for that.
Oh, you never. So you didn't pay him the $490.
No, the $490 was to replace the carpet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What did you pay him? Did you pay him to clean it? Did you ever give him his money?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's going to claim that she never paid me, and I mean, and you know, I'm telling you, you're going to get into a fight. He's not going to admit. They left too much water on the carpet.
But that replaced the carpet put on my sales slip that it had a foul odor.
Okay, but...
Very strong foul odor.
Okay, well, you're going to have to bring him into court with you to testify to that. So
wow.
you're going to take that person out of his job for that day to sit with you at the courthouse. And I'm telling you, what the carpet cleaning company is going to argue, listen, we've been doing this forever. Jim, who goes out there, has been doing it for 20 years. We have this high-tech machine. There's no way extra water can get into the carpet. And yeah, I'm just trying to tell you.
Came back to try to treat the carpet 48 hours later.
Yeah, I mean, he was following up, but he's going to come back and say, okay, we went out 48 hours later. I didn't see a problem.
And
that's what they're going to try to.
Oh, okay.
And then he's going to say, she owes me for the cleaning of the carpet.
Wow.
That's what you're going to hear. But I mean, I'm just playing the devil's advocate with you. That's how I would handle it if I were his lawyer.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good luck, Linda.
All right.
Yeah, man. Thanks for calling in.
Appreciate that phone call, Linda.
These small claims courts cases, Tim, I know it's a matter of principle to a lot of people, but they can drag on, take a lot of time and a lot of money.
I mean, principle is one thing. Yeah. You invest so many hours.
Sometimes you make a business decision, but, you know, it's her case.
All right. So let's go ahead and go over to Thomas. And again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Eddie, I see that you dropped off, but if you want to call back in, Scott can go ahead and get you back on the line. Sometimes it's a
Who's
phone
that,
line
Thomas?
Right there. Thomas.
Okay, he's got a question I can run over. He said he was poorly represented in a two-year-old DUI case.
Yeah, Thomas, you on the line?
Well, I can...
Right here.
Oh, you are there? Okay.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Quick back history. I'm 51 years old. I served in the Navy for 23 years. I was honorably discharged, and I've never been in trouble at all in my life, with this one exception. I was pulled over by an Atlantic police officer who I believe was off duty on his way home. And I ended up seeing his dash cam video, and the pullover was legitimate. I was on a motorcycle. I was riding with a broken leg and a bag of groceries hanging off the other handlebar. He pulled me over for riding the center line. I'm not a drinker or a drugger, so he pulled me over, and he could see that I was sober. I was less than 2 miles from my house. I assume it's the JSO DUI squad showed up, and they did the pen and the eye test, and I passed that naturally. I was pretty angry because, in my mind, the policeman should have said, sir, I see that you live 2 miles away. Please be more careful. You know, please be careful getting the rest of the way home. No, $163 ticket. So I was kind of angry. When I put the pen down on his ticket box, I knocked it out of his hands. He let it drop to the ground. I immediately picked it up and apologized and said, I'm sorry. I did not mean to do that. Boom, the JSO guy had me in cuffs. I didn't move. But he said, just as reading from a script, stop resisting. And they took me downtown. I was charged with five things: assault on a Leo, resisting without violence, controlled substance times two, which were prescribed medicines, small self doses, but not in the bottle. And they also charged me for Tic Tacs in my pocket. They called them a new legend drug. Judge didn't even know what it was. And I had the state representative guy. Nobody ever mentioned the DUI squad car tape. Had that been introduced into evidence, the judge would have dismissed this because it was all nonsense. But nobody even mentioned it. I had to plea because I couldn't risk going to court for felony. I don't want to be a convicted felon. I want to vote. I want to own a gun. I want to keep my Navy retirement. I couldn't risk it. I had to plead to a misdemeanor assault on a Leo, which is funny because it's the least true of all these charges. My concern now is that's 2 years ago, this month, August 2nd. Is there anything that I can do? Do I have any recourse at this point?
Did you? Did he find you guilty or did he withhold adjudication? Because if you withheld adjudication, you can get it sealed. Hello?
Thomas? No, looking like
that dropped off.
Yeah, looking like that dropped off.
Well, that's something he should have fought all the way to the end. I mean, he can subpoena the video.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the state attorney sees that video, he probably drops the case, drops all the charges. But let's assume if he pled guilty to the misdemeanor, he probably can't seal his record. But if the judge withheld adjudication because he had no problems in the past, he can get rid of that charge. That's my answer.
Okay. All right. There you go.
Thomas, if you're listening, if you want more information, call me at the office on Monday at 396-5555, and I can help let you talk to a lawyer that works in the criminal law area.
Yeah, that's
get the definitive opinion on that.
396-5555. Yeah. Let's go ahead and take it over to Carl. Carl, thanks so much for holding on the line, man.
Hello.
Hey, Carl.
How are you doing? Thank you for having my call.
No, man, thanks.
I got a question. I had a credit bureau or a collection agency sent me a bill, and the bill's been paid for 45 days, and they sent me another notice that they turned it over to the three credit bureaus. What recourse do I have? Because what they can do is screw my credit up. You know how hard it is to get Equifax and them people.
Well, have you told them? Are they aware of the fact that the bill's been paid?
They ought to be told. I mean, it's been 45 days. Somebody should have told
them. Have you run a credit report to see if it's on there?
No, but they just got me the notice. You know, I got the notice today that they turned it over to, you know, that it's an uncollectible bill. And the bill's been paid for 45 days.
Paid in full?
Yeah. In fact, it was paid more than full. Paid almost $100 more. What it was, an association fee. And it was paid for 2 years. And it wasn't $918, and I paid them $1,000. And that was 45 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Is that where you live? Homeowners?
No, this is in Georgia.
Okay. Well, I know. I mean, there are some lawyers that handle those type of cases. I don't know what to tell you.
What recourse do I have?
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's not on your credit yet, as far as you know. I mean, if it's on your credit, you can do something about it. But we don't even know if it's on your credit.
But if it is on my credit, what can I do?
Well, you can. They've got to remove it. And if they don't remove it, you can sue them.
Okay.
I mean, that's what your recourse is.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
All right.
I appreciate that phone call.
You do a good job.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Carl. Let's go over to Eddie. Eddie, we're coming up on a break right here, but let's go ahead and get your question in real quick.
Sure.
Hello?
Eddie, yeah.
Hey, Eddie, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I called a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, you don't feel the probate law. My mother passed away.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
I messed my phone up. And is there any way I can give you my telephone number? You can give the probate lawyer that you work with my new telephone number.
Sure. Go ahead and leave it with Scott. You don't want to give it over the air.
And
then what I'll do is I'll get Matt. I think he was supposed to get in touch with you. I'll get Matt to call you.
Yeah, so Eddie, just stay on the line right there.
Thanks,
Scott's going to go ahead and get that information. We're coming up on a break right now. Debbie, I see you waiting on the line. As soon as we come back from this break, Debbie, we will get to you. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. You have a minute or two now, so go ahead and go over to farrahandfarrah.com. Listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Let's not waste any time here. Let's kick it right over to the phone lines. Debbie, over on the west side, you had a question about the statute of limitations on medical malpractice?
Actually, my question was more in regards to the protection that Shands has of a $250,000 limitation for malpractice.
It's $200,000.
$200,000, right. You know. My nephew lost his life in Shands because of negligence. That I know people want to blame somebody for a death in their family just because they need someone to blame, but that's not the situation. I'm familiar with the medical field, and there was some terrible mistakes made. And because of that, my nephew lost his life at the age of 21, which was terrible, of course, you know, on the family. But when we went seeking help, we were turned away from all attorneys, and finally
right. –
One took the time to let me know that the reason I said, I don't understand why no one will help me. And he finally came out and told me that it's because it's going to cost as much to run the case as the limit right. you could get. So right. basically, Shands can get away with murder.
Basically, they're part of a government. They get sovereign immunity because Shands is owned by the government. So you're correct. I mean, they have a $200,000 cap, and it's not right. They can do get away with murder.
Yep.
Because it costs probably $100,000 to handle a malpractice case. And if you collect $200,000 and $100,000 goes to the costs, there's no money left. Not counting the attorney's time in it. That's the problem. Now, there are certain situations, if it's really egregious, you can get around the immunity or you can petition the legislature to pay more money. But it's very rare. And there are go ahead.
And to find someone willing to
yep.
look into it that deep is hard, you know.
To take on that fight.
I had the Navy ready to fly down here and a jet plane because of a pleading email Christmas morning on 2014. They were going to fly here and get my nephew. Shans told me they did not know that there was a such thing as a transport, because they told us for 3 weeks he needed to be transported to a special machine, but they couldn't get him. They had no way to get him there. And I did research and found out there was a way. And I asked them, why didn't they know about this service, an ECMO transport service? And their response was, they just didn't even know it existed, but now they'll change their policies now that I've made them aware.
Was the doctor a Shan's doctor, or was he a private doctor?
They were all Shan's doctors, okay. And I know they're covered under it, too.
Yeah, because sometimes they have private doctors there that can get around the $200,000. You know, the cap used to be $100,000 until a couple of years ago, so that was even a lot less. But, yeah, it's a tough situation. We deal with it all the time. It happens, and let's say if you get hit by a JEA truck and you got a family that's wiped out by an accident, you're limited to $200,000. It applies there also.
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes you can get around it in a medical malpractice situation. I mean, I know you had a lawyer look at it. Were the nurses all employed by Shans? Because sometimes they
Private nurses. And the physicians, they were all
everybody? Okay. Shans. Because sometimes you have independent contractors there working at the hospital that are not. They're at Shans working, but they don't work for Shans.
As far as I know, they all work there, and the nurses all work there. And as far as I know, the attorneys that looked into, there was one attorney that did take the records out in Gainesville and kept them for like 3 months, and then sent them back to us and told us there wasn't nothing they could do for it.
Yeah, he was probably looking for some other person that maybe was involved in the case that was not an actual employee of Shans, like an independent contractor, because they do bring people in like that.
Yeah. And I don't know if your office wants to look and see if that was the case or not. I don't know. But the malpractice I know is 2 years, and he passed away December 28, 2014.
Who was going to file the claim on his behalf? Was his parents?
My brother. Right. I actually did all the legwork. I went through a 750-page medical record and highlighted all the errors because I already knew about all of them. I was there every day by my nephew's side for 37 days. And it's just unbelievable the stuff that including a machine breaking numerous times, and they had no backup machine. Well, and they did procedures on him thinking that it was him, and yet they found out a nurse hooked the machine up backwards. I mean, it just was numerous things over and over.
And that nurse was working for Shans at the time?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, if you had two lawyers look at it and everybody came up with the same conclusion, it's probably going to be difficult.
I had like 10 of them.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to stop, but I have gone. I filed a complaint.
You can file a complaint with the Agency for Healthcare Administration, and they'll do an investigation.
I did that already, too.
All right, good. Thanks.
Appreciate you calling in, Debbie. And for you, for listening to the Consumer Law Hour each and every single Saturday, it's brought to you by Farrah and Farrah, Eddie and Chuck here in the studio.